Ralph was waiting by the restaurant entrance. He kissed me, then stood back to examine the bruises on my face. "Definitely improving," he said. The head waiter took us to our table.
"One of the best things about moving into the city is all the great restaurants," Ralph remarked.
"Where do you live?" I asked.
"Not too far from here, actually. It's a furnished place with a housekeeping service."
I wondered what his income was.
"That's quite a lot of money with your alimony, too." "Don't tell me," he grinned. "Eventually, I expect I'll buy a condominium."
"Well, did you find out whether McGraw has ever called Masters at Ajax?"
"Yes, Vic. I talked to his secretary. He's never had a call from the guy. Do you think you could let this drop now?"
The waiter arrived to take our orders. I asked for poached salmon, and Ralph took the scampi. Then he remarked,
"I've talked about my divorce. I've never asked whether you were ever married."
"Yes, I was, a long time ago. He is a successful attorney now, with a wife and 3 children."
"Do you still see him?"
"No, and I really don't think about him. Are you trying to ask whether I wish I had a husband and family?" Ralph looked astonished.
"Take it easy, Vic. I don't miss Dorothy, but that doesn't mean I'm giving up on marriage. And I wouldn't be much of a man if I didn't miss my children. And just because I've been trying to stop you from running after gangsters doesn't mean I think you ought to be sitting home watching soaps and doing laundry."
I forced a smile. "Sorry. Guess I'm overreacting. The reason my marriage fell apart was because I'm too independent. Also, I'm not into housekeeping, as you noticed the other night. Dick was a terrible husband for someone like me. He hoped I'd stay home applauding him while he clawed his way up the ladder in the legal world. The trouble is, there are times when I wish I did have a couple of children and was doing the middle-class family thing." Ralph squeezed my hand.
"I think you're remarkable, Vic. I like your style. Don't give up on men just because of Dick."
I smiled. "I know. But I'm a good detective, and it's not a job that's easy to combine with marriage. I don't want to be distracted by the thought of someone fussing at me because Earl Smyson beat me up."
"I see. Of course, you might find a guy who'd stand on the sidelines cheering your successes. But I think this Earl Smyson business would take a lot of getting used to." "Aren't there any dangers to claim handling?" I asked. "I would imagine you'd come across fraudulent claimants from time to time who aren't too happy to have their frauds uncovered."
"That's true, but it's harder to prove a fraudulent claim than you might think. There are lots of doctors who will happily testify to non-provable injuries for a cut of the award."
"I found a claim draft lying around the other day," I said. "It was an Ajax draft, a carbon of one."
"You did?"
Ralph was surprised.
"Where did you find it?"
"In Peter Thayer's place."
"Do you have it? I'd like to see it."
I picked my bag up and got the paper out. Ralph studied it intently.
"This looks like one of ours, all right. But no claim files are supposed to go home with employees."
He folded it and put it in his wallet.
"This should go back to the office."
I was pleased I'd had the forethought to make Xeroxes of it. "Do you know the claimant, Gielchowski?" I asked.
"No, but it's the maximum payment, so he must be on a total disability case. How did it get so greasy?"
"Oh, it was lying on the floor," I said vaguely. When the waiter brought the check, I insisted on splitting it with Ralph.
"Too many dinners like this," I said, "and you'll have to give up either your alimony or your apartment."
He finally let me pay my part of the bill.
"Before they kick me out for not paying the rent, would you like to see my place?"
I laughed. "Sure, Ralph. I'd love to." Ralph's alarm went off at 6:30. I buried my head under the pillow. "Why so early?" I groaned. "Do you have to be at the office at 7:30?
"This isn't early to me, baby. This is luxury. Besides, I like morning. Best time of day."
"Yeah. I've often said God must have loved mornings. He made so many of them. How about bringing me some coffee?" He got out of bed.
Sure thing, Miss Warshawski, ma'am. Serve us with a smile.
If you're going to be so full of pep this early in the day, I said, I think I'll head back north for breakfast. I swung my legs out of bed. Besides, I have a teenage guest at Lottie's, and I ought to see how she's doing.
How about coming back here tonight?
Ralph suggested. Maybe not. I've got a meeting tonight. I was bothered by Ralph's persistence. Did he want to keep tabs on me? If his boss, Yardley Masters, was involved in the deaths of John and Peter Thayer, it wasn't impossible that his assistant was involved as well. You get to work early every morning? I asked.
Unless I'm sick.
Last Monday morning, too?
He looked at me, puzzled. Why do you ask? Oh, the morning when Peter was shot. No, I went down to Thayer's apartment and held him down while Yardley shot him.
Yardley get in on time that morning? I persisted. He gave a snort of laughter.
You're outrageous. If you were a man, you wouldn't get away with that.
If I were a man, I wouldn't be here, I pointed out. Ralph went off to shower, and I pulled the curtains back to look outside. We were in for another hot, polluted spell. The air had a faint yellow tinge. When I'd showered and dressed, I joined Ralph for a cup of coffee. "Want to ride downtown?" I asked. He declined, saying he got his exercise walking to Ajax each day. When I got back to Lottie's apartment, she was in the kitchen. Jill was there, talking animatedly.
"Good morning, Vic,"
said Lottie, her face amused.
"What a pity you had to work all night."
I gave her a playful punch on the shoulder.
"Were you really working all night?" Jill asked in a worried voice.
"No, and Lottie knows it. I spent the night at a friend's." Jill smiled.
"Are you detecting today?"
"Yes, looking for a needle in a haystack. I'll call down to the clinic around noon, though." "You thought about calling your mother?" She made a face.
"I've decided to be a runaway and stay here."
"Never mind," I said. I gave her a quick hug. "I invite you to stay at Lottie's for as long as you like." She laughed at that.
"Okay, I'll call my mom."
"Atta girl. Now I must go. Bye, Lottie," I called and started out the door. Outside, a squad car was waiting. Sergeant McGonagall was sitting in the passenger seat.
"Good morning, Miss Warshawski. Lieutenant Mallory asked me to find you. He got a call yesterday from the Winnetka police. They've turned up a witness to the car used by John Thayer's killer, although not to the shooting itself. Unfortunately, the witness is only 5 years old. Seems he'd been playing in the ditch, which was a no-no, but his folks were asleep, so he sneaked out. Says he saw a big black car outside the Thayer house and a guy in the passenger seat who scared the daylights out of him. It seems this guy had some mark like a big Z on his face. He saw it, panicked, and ran for his life."
"Sounds like a good lead," I commented politely. "All you have to do is find a big black car and a man with a mark on his face." McGonagall looked sharply at me.
"We police are not total idiots, Miss Warshawski. The lieutenant and I wondered if you knew anyone with a big Z on his face."
"Should I?" I felt my face twitch. Earl's gopher, Tony, had such a scar.
"We thought it might be Tony Bronski. He got a cut like that 8 years ago. He hangs around Earl Smyson these days."
"Oh," I said. "Earl and I aren't exactly social friends, Sergeant. I don't know all his companions."
"Well, the lieutenant thought you'd like to know about it. He said he knew you'd hate anything to happen to the Thayer girl while you were looking after her."
He got back into his car.
"The lieutenant has been watching too many Kojak reruns," I called after him.
But it didn't surprise me that Earl was involved in John Thayer's death. And if Earl decided that I needed to be blown away completely, Jill would make a perfect hostage. I suddenly felt very cold. On impulse, I went back into the apartment. By now, Lottie and Jill had left. I looked up the knife grinder's number and dialed. I asked for Andrew McGraw. "It's important," I said. "Tell him it concerns Earl Smyson and John Thayer." McGraw's husky voice came on the line. "This is V.I. Warshawski," I told him. "Tell me, did you finger John Thayer for Earl Smyson?" He was silent. "What do you think of this?" I said. "Thayer threatened to squeal, and you asked Earl to kill him just in case."
"Warshawski, I got a tape running. You make any more accusations, and I could see you in court."
"Don't try it, McGraw. They might subpoena the rest of your tapes." He slammed the phone down. I decided to go to the knife grinder's neighborhood and check on the bars there in case any of them had seen Masters and McGraw drinking together. On my way, I stopped at Lottie's clinic. "I need to talk to Lottie," I said. Carol took one look at my face and got Lottie out of the examining room. I explained what had happened. "I don't want to get Jill upset," I said, "but I don't want to feel we're sitting on a landmine here."
"Yes," Lottie said, "but if she goes home, what's to stop them taking her out of the Thayer house? I think she's better here until her father's funeral anyway. She called the mother. The funeral won't be until Friday."
"Yes, but Lottie, I can't sit guarding Jill." She frowned, then her face cleared.
"Carol's brother. Big, bruising, good-natured guy. He's an architecture student. Maybe he can come and watch out for thugs."
She called Carol, who agreed that Paul would be glad to help. After that, I drove round the knife grinder territory. There weren't as many bars as downtown. By noon, I'd drawn 9 blanks, and I was meeting with the same hostility and indifference and the same lack of recognition of my photos. I decided to go get lunch. I found a steakhouse and ordered a steak, an undressed salad, and a gin fizz. The hostess bustled up to take my money. "Very pleasant lunch," I said. On impulse, I pulled out my folder. "I wonder if these two men have ever come in here together." She picked up the pictures of McGraw and Masters.
"Oh, yes."
I couldn't believe it.
"Are you sure?" "I couldn't be mistaken. What's the problem?"
"Paternity suit," I said promptly.
"Do they come in often?" "Together, maybe 3 times a year. But this man," she tapped McGraw's picture, "comes in a lot. I think he's with that big union down the road."
"Oh, really?" I said. I pulled John Thayer's picture out. "What about him?"
"It looks familiar," she said, "but he's never been in here."